It is now my honor to introduce our commencement speaker. A proud graduate of Whitworth University, Kevin Parker was elected to serve as Washington State Representative for Spokane's 6th District in 2008. In Olympia, Representative Parker holds a variety of leadership positions within his caucus. Kevin is known for his engaging style, for reaching across the aisle, and for knowing his constituents well. During his political career, he has personally knocked on more than 40,000 doors, probably a door near you. Representative Parker is a successful businessman and entrepreneur who owns the Dutch Brothers coffee shops in Spokane, a favorite stop for the staff, faculty, and students at Whitworth University. He is also adjunct business professor at Whitworth and a leadership instructor for our service members at Fairchild Air Force Base, where he was named Honorary Base Commander in 2011. Representative Parker is a trusted leader in our state and provides an example of courage and strength we would all do well to emulate. As a survivor of the 1999 shooting at Columbine High School, Representative Parker has traveled throughout the United States and internationally to share lessons of leadership learned in that tragedy. As an active member of our community, Representative Parker serves on the boards of Red Cross, Generation Alive, YMCA, Innovate Washington, Young Life, and International Trade Alliance, among others. And he's the corporate chair for the Inland Northwest Juvenile Diabetes Research Foundation. He has received more than 10 awards for his work with business and education issues in the Washington legislature, and is recognized for authoring the only private sector jobs bill that was passed into law in 2011. Representative Parker is also credited with substantially increasing the penalty on human traffickers and introducing one of the strongest Medicaid fraud bills in the country, saving Washington state taxpayers an estimated $100 to $300 million. Kevin is currently a Rodel Fellowship Scholar and is just one of 22 elected leaders selected from across the United States to join the prestigious Rodel Fellowship in 2011. Anyone who knows Kevin will tell you that he is a proud Whitworth alum and consistently speaks to high school students about the value of a Whitworth education. Every time I have had the opportunity to visit with Kevin in Olympia, he is always wearing some item of Whitworth clothing. He loves the crimson and black. He studied political science while at Whitworth, earned his Master of Business Administration degree at George Fox University, and studied leadership at Harvard. Representative Parker is married to his college sweetheart, Carrie, who is here today with us, and they live in Spokane with their three children. And just in case you haven't seen it, on this month's cover of Spokane Coeur d'Alene Living Magazine, there has to be the largest face shot of any person I've ever seen on a magazine. So would you please join me in welcoming Representative Kevin Parker. Kevin.
Well, it's fun to be here. Welcome, trustees, Chairman Oliver, President Taylor, ASWU President Huff, faculty, staff, broke but happy parents, and most importantly, congratulations to the Whitworth graduating class of 2013. You know, I am profoundly grateful for this institution. It is a place where I discovered that sometimes we have to unlearn before we can learn, and that sometimes an education or a degree doesn't mean that we're armed with all the right answers, but yet we are equipped to ask better questions. The other thing I learned at Whitworth is how hard it can be to get a girl to go out on a date with you. So my sophomore year, I saw a young junior walking across the campus in front of Cole's auditorium named Carrie. And I decided that she was the most beautiful girl I had ever seen. So I enthusiastically went up and asked her out. And she enthusiastically responded, no. And this pattern continued for several months. In fact, I had asked her out a total of 8 times. So realizing that I was hitting some serious turbulence, I did what any young undergrad would do, and I turned to professors Terry McGonigal and Ron Pyle for dating advice. And when you are in my situation and you turn to professors for that kind of dating advice, things are not well. As we proceeded, I finally got her to go on a walk with me around the loop. And as we're walking around the loop, I realized just how different her and I were. She came to Whitworth on the presidential scholarship. I had to pay extra to get in the door. She went to the National Spelling Bee. I had mistaken that for a coloring contest. She had more A's on her report card in one semester than I had in my previous 11 years. And as I was searching for this elusive common ground, I finally found it. When we're walking around the loop, we're just turning the corner in front of Mack Hall, and she says the statement, all through high school, I had only one B. And I said, me too. Think for a moment, graduates, of your experiences, the fun moments, the hard moments, the late night conversations in BJ, Warren, Mac, Ballard, Stewart, and the professors that have profoundly changed your life. Everyone from Julia Stronks to Dale Soden, Leonard Oakland, Jerry Sitzer, Beck, the experiences of Jan Term, Core. And underneath all of this, which the foundation of Whitworth lies, is the mission of mind and heart. It's a mission that says one without the other is incomplete. It says that we cannot approach the world with just our intellect, nor can we approach it with just our heart. It was Plato himself who said, in any successful civilization, we need to approach it with both. We need to find balance between our passion and our reason. The scriptures say, love the Lord your God with all your heart and mind and soul. But what if the mission isn't a mission as much as it is a commission? A commission that is how we are to approach the world. Because tomorrow we will begin to step permanently from out behind the pine cone curtain. And there is a distinct difference, and regardless of what community you live, of being a resident versus being a citizen. And I believe that Whitworth, the mission of mind and heart, is a mission to you today, but tomorrow it's the commission that in our respective communities, regardless of whether we serve in positions of authority or positions of obscurity, our contributions are equal. And with that, we are to be a citizen of the mind and heart. In a few minutes, you're going to walk across the stage and receive a prestigious degree, a degree that means that you have thought and entertained some of the complexities. Think about the complexities that await. Last night, more than 300,000 Americans had nowhere to lay their head. In the state of Washington, 1 out of 4 children are born into poverty. And women are being human trafficked by the hour across our international and state borders. And some scholars estimate that as a result, our world has more than 27 million slaves in it. More than at any other point in the history of the world. And while you were growing up and while you were here, you saw a different world than I saw when I sat in your seat. You saw a world where terror touched the shore of the American soil. You saw a recession steamroll across the wheat fields and cities of the United States. And you saw the shooting of a first grade classroom. Yet, instead of being pessimistic and angry, scholars are saying that perhaps your generation will literally be the generation that saves society. Victor Hugo said, "There is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come." And as you step out into the world, you are approaching a world that is tired of following leaders who don't know where they are going. You are stepping out into a world where they are tired of just hearing a sermon. They want to see one. I believe, as a citizen of mind and heart, that commission is going to meet the world nicely and brilliantly. You know, after I graduated, I got married shortly thereafter. I only had to ask once. And then Carrie and I joined the Young Life staff of Littleton, Colorado, and that's where I was at Columbine High School. And inside Columbine, the day of the shooting, I was in the cafeteria having lunch with a student. And above me was the library where most of the Columbine students lost their lives that day. In the library, after most of the shooting had happened, a football player, he's about 6'2", solid muscle, not totally unlike myself, leaned up and he realized that he was alive. He had been shot in the back shoulder. And as he sees the doorway of the library, he begins to move quickly towards it. But yet, out of the corner of his eye, he saw a kid with severe cerebral palsy named Mike Kinchin. Remember how I had talked about Whitworth teaches us to ask questions. I believe the most profound question any human being can ask themselves is this: who is in charge and what are your relationships? In a moment of challenge, Evan Todd is faced with a question. And out of the corner of his eye, he catches Mike Kinchin trying to move quickly, but yet not very successfully. And Evan Todd goes over to Mike, and he doesn't just pat him on the back. He doesn't just tell him he can do it. But he literally lifts him up, risking his life, and carries him outside of Columbine High School, saving Mike Kinchin's life. Who is in charge and what are my relationships? For when you receive this degree, it raises another question of what is your obligation to the world? And how do we respond as a citizen of both mind and heart? You know, last December, I was in Washington, D.C. for some meetings, and I'm a huge Abraham Lincoln fan. And I wanted to see this home that had opened up called the Soldier's Home. And I realized it was my last day there. I was flying back to Spokane the next day. And so I hopped in a cab, and the cab picks me up, and the cab driver turns around, and I said, "Hey, mister, can you take me to the Soldier's Home? Do you know where that is?" And he turns around, and he said, "Son," and I knew I was in trouble. And he says, "My great-grandmother was a slave in this town. I have been to every corner and every crevice of Washington, D.C. Of course I know where the Soldier's Home is, and I'd be happy to take you there." He was a rather cantankerous fellow. As we ride in his cab, we pass Howard University and have a wonderful discussion about Howard, and we move on, and we have a very engaging and cantankerous conversation, but very fun. And then as the cab pulls up in front of the Soldier's Home, it is literally sitting right in front of us. And I said, his name was Earl. And I said, "Hey, Earl, do I just call the phone number on the side of your door and will someone come get me in about a half hour?" And Earl says, "I'll tell you what, you seem like a nice kid." And he said, "I'll wait for you." I said, "Are you going to keep the meter running, Earl?" He says, "No." And I go to get out of the cab, and then it occurs to me, I stop, and I said, "Hey, Earl, have you ever actually been inside the Soldier's Home?" And Earl said, with a gruff voice, "Well, no, actually, I haven't." I said, "Oh, really?" I said, "Earl, do you know what was written inside that house?" And I said, "Earl, somewhere in that house, Abraham Lincoln wrote the Emancipation Proclamation. Given your history, come in with me. I'll pay your way if they charge us." So I come in, And I had told them I was coming to make sure that it was open. And I think they got state representative confused with U.S. representative. I didn't feel like I should really burst their bubble. I walk in. The curator comes down with a big camera and people with her. And she says, I understand there's a VIP with us today. And I said, yes. His name is Earl. His great-grandmother was a slave. They give us a rather comprehensive tour. And after 2 hours of seeing the soldier's home and what Lincoln did and where he wrote, they said, we have one more treat for you. And they took us to this back room. And on loan from the White House was the actual Emancipation Proclamation. There was only a security guard and a huge vaulted door, and it was under some pretty thick glass. Earl walks in. Neither of us say a word. He walks to the right of it, and he puts his hand on the glass encasing the Emancipation Proclamation. After 2 minutes of just complete silence and reverence for the moment, it occurred to me that perhaps one of the most important things of life is not even our heritage, but it's our identity. And you think about our identity, that every single one of you in this room, in Jesus' eyes, are royalty. You are princes and princesses of Christ. You are heirs to the kingdom. Yet, when we forget our identity or misplace it, we climb over the walls of the castle and we drink dirty water and we eat moldy bread. As Earl, as I looked at him, I said, Earl, how cool is it that these words written by the president freed your great-grandmother? And he just stared at the document, and all he could say was, I know, I know, I know. See, to be a citizen of mind and heart in this world, constantly changing world with emerging complexities, means that when we look at people, we remind them of their identity. We remind them that they are a prince and princess of Christ, that they are royalty. Or in other words, that they are a VIP. Some of you are ready to go. Some of you are apprehensive. And some wish you could do the 4 years all over again. Yet tomorrow, as you scatter into the world, I want us to be confident of one more thing. That in Habakkuk 1:5, as Santos read, look at the nations and watch, and be utterly amazed, for I'm doing something in your day you would not believe, even if you were told. I want you to take that mission of mind and heart, and I want you to turn it into your commission. I don't want you to ever be a resident, but I want you to be a citizen of mind and heart. And I want you to never be so busy or so focused that we don't catch the person limping out of the corner of our eye. I want you to be a citizen of mind and heart that reminds people of their identity, that reminds them that they are royalty in Jesus' eyes. And I want you to be a citizen who remembers Habakkuk 1:5, the thought that God never leaves us or moves us from something to nothing. He always moves us from something to something more. And perhaps the great idea that's coming, as Victor Hugo alluded to, is perhaps there is nothing more powerful than an idea whose time has come in the version of a citizen of mind and heart. Whitworth class of 2013, we are proud of you, we love you, and congratulations.